Chapter 12. Holden. The wall screen in the dock's public lobby was tuned to an entertainment news feed. A breathtakingly pretty young woman with one eyelid that was either rouged or tattooed red was being interviewed by someone off-screen. The crawler at the bottom of the screen identified her as Zadina Rael. Holden wasn't sure who she was. The sound was on, but incomprehensible over the sound of the people moving through the lobby to or from the docks. The subtitles were in Hindi. On the screen, Rael shook her head and a thick tear dripped down her cheek as the feed shifted to images of a ruined city under a filthy brown sky. So, something about the situation on Earth. It was easy to forget that the entertainment feeds, musicians and actors and celebrities for the sake of celebrity, were all going to be as affected by the catastrophe as everybody else. It felt like that slice of reality should be separate, inviolate. Plagues and wars and disasters weren't supposed to impinge on the manufactured world of entertainment, but of course they did. Zadina Rael, whatever she did that got her a place on the screen, was a human being too, and had probably lost someone she loved when the rocks fell. Would probably lose more. Captain Holden. The man was thick-shouldered and dark-haired with a sharp goatee. He carried an air of exhaustion and good humor along with his hand terminal. His uniform identified him as Port Control, and his name badge read Bates. Sorry there. You've been waiting long? Nope, Holden said, taking the proffered terminal. Just a few minutes. Things are busy, Bates said. Not a problem, Holden said as he signed and pressed his thumb to the reader pad. The terminal chimed. It was a small, happy sound. Like the terminal was very happy Holden had authorized the delivery.
Got you in Bay H-15?
Bates said.
We'll have that unloaded for you right away. Who's your repair coordinator?
We've got our own, Holden said.
Naomi Nagata.
Right, of course, the man said, nodded once and was gone. On the screen, Zadina Rael had been replaced by a thick-featured Ifra McCoy. At least, Holden knew who she was. The invisible interviewer said something, and a lull in the background noise let him hear the answer. There must be a response. We have to stand up. The frustration and pain in McCoy's voice bothered him, and he didn't know if it was because he agreed with her or because he was afraid what that response would lead to. He turned back toward the docks proper and the work at hand. In a spin station like Tycho or the Lagrange stations, the ship would have been parked in vacuum. Luna was another thing entirely. The shipyard had vast locks dug deep into the lunar body with tugs to guide ships in and out, retractable seals, air. The Rosinante stood upright, drive cone toward the center of the moon and chisel tip upper decks toward the stars, held in a webwork of scaffolding. The space was large enough to house a ship three times her size, and all of it was filled with breathable air. Racks of construction mechs stood against the wall except for the four that were on the Rosinante, crawling gently over its surface like spiders on a crow. Naomi was in one, Amos in another. The third was Sandra Ipp, one of the two engineers who Fred Johnson had brought on as the Rosie's crew for the flight to Luna when the real crew, Les Holden, had scattered to the void. Alex and Bobby stood on a raised platform, looking up at the body of the ship. The damage the Free Navy had done was knotted as a scar and bright. Wide panels, the newly delivered sections of hull, rose up the ship and scaffold, guided by massive Waldos. Alex held out a headset, and Holden connected it to his hand terminal, shifting to the full crew channel.
"How's it looking?" he asked.
"They did a number on us," Naomi said. "I'm impressed."
"Always easier to break things than put them together," Holden said.
"More evidence for that," Naomi agreed with a belter nod of the fist. and these replacement sections. Problem? Sandra Ipp's voice answered. It was a little jarring to hear an unfamiliar voice. They're carbon silicate lace, state-of-the-art, lighter, stronger. These things can deflect a glancing PDC round. Defensiveness just below the surface told Holden this wasn't the first time through the conversation. They can for now, Naomi said. Holden switched his mic to the Rocinante-only channel, but kept listening on the full crew. So, just between the family here? What's the issue with the new plates? Nothing, Naomi said. They're great. Everything it says on the tin. But 5 years from now? 10? They don't age well?
Well, that's the thing, Alex drawled. Ain't none of this stuff 10 years old yet. The materials science folks got a kick in the pants after the protomolecule. Bunches of new toys. Lace plating's just one. In theory, it should hold up just like the real thing. In practice, we're the practice. I had a hell of a time convincing the Rosie I wasn't putting in the wrong mass for them, too. It's going to change how she handles.
Holden crossed his arms. Above him, the Waldos shifted the new hull section in, laying it along the Rosie's side. Are we sure we want to do this? We can hold out for the regular kind. Not if we want to get out of Tycho anytime soon, we can't, Naomi said. There's a war on. We can turn down the contract, Holden said. Fred can find another ride.
I don't know, Cap, Amos said. Things being what they are, I kind of like that we're getting work. I mean, as long as money still works.
He paused. Hey, does money still work?
It does if we win, Naomi said. Free Navy ports weren't going to refit and refuel us anyway.
Right, Amos said.
So I kind of like that we're getting work.
Two of the mechs scuttled forward to the edge of the new hull plate. Welding torches like little suns burst into life, cleaving old technology and new together. There was something about it that Holden disliked and distrusted. But there was also something amazing. The very fabric the lace hull was made from hadn't existed when he was born, and now it did. Vast intelligences had designed the protomolecule, the rings, the weird and implacable ruins that covered all the new worlds. They might be extinct, but they were also being incorporated into what humanity knew, what it could do, how it defined itself. A kid born today would grow up in a world where carbon silicate lace was as common as titanium or glass. That it was a collaboration between humanity and the ghosts of a massive and alien intelligence would go right by them. Holden was one of the lucky generation who would straddle that breakpoint, that seam between before and after that Naomi and Amos and Ip were making literal right now. And so he could be amazed by how cool it was. Creepy, but cool.
It's the future, he said. We might as well get some practice with it.
The rest of Fred Johnson's temporary crew was either already on the Rocinante along with Clarissa, or on the way from their quarters on Luna. There was an excitement about the coming action. It was the first time that they, Earth, Mars, and even the less radical splinters of the OPA, would work together to take any direct action against the Free Navy. The heavy lifting would be done by Earth and Mars, but the Rocinante would be there. An observation ship carrying Fred Johnson. A representative, however imperfect, of the Belt. They were ready. Except that Holden also wasn't. Especially now that his parents had come up the well from Earth, the impulse to stay close surprised him. He'd spent most of his adult life off-planet. If anyone asked him, he'd have told them that he didn't miss Earth. Some people, yes, some places from his childhood, maybe. But there'd been no sense of longing for the planet itself. It was only now that it had been attacked that he wanted to protect it. Maybe it was always like that.
He'd outgrown his childhood home, but in the back of his mind, the unexamined assumption was that it would still be there. Changed, maybe, grown a little older, but there. Only it wasn't now. Wanting to stay was the same as wanting to go back a little in time, to when it hadn't happened. Fred Johnson sent a message. He and weapons technicians Sunyi Steinberg and Gord Droga were finishing their last meeting. As soon as the new hull was welded into place and the pressure tests complete, they could go. If Holden had any last business on Luna, this was the time for it. He had some last business on Luna. The torches flared and died and flared again. The Rocinante was remade a little, the same way it had been over and over through the years, little changes adding up over time as the ship moved from what it had been to what it would be next, just like all the people she carried. "You okay?" Bobby asked. "What?" Holden said. "You were sighing," she said.
"He does that sometimes," Alex said.
"I do," Holden said, realizing as he did that Bobby was still looped in on the Rocinante only channel, that he was glad she was.
"I didn't know I did that."
"Don't worry about it," Naomi said. "It's cute."
"So?" he said.
"When you're done with that, Naomi, Fred's on his way."
"Yeah,"
she said. And he was probably just imagining the dread in her voice.
"All right."
The cart that drove them down toward the refugee station ran on electromagnetic track that held the wheels to the ground. Part grumble, part chime, the sound was loud enough that Holden felt he had to raise his voice a little to be heard over it. "If she's still being paid through the UN or Mars, that would be different," Holden said. "If we're offering her a place on the ship permanently, I just think we need to be careful about how we do it."
"She's good," Naomi said. "She's actually trained for a ship like the Rosie, which is more than any of us can say. She gets along with the crew. Why wouldn't you want Bobby on board?"
The air in the deeper corridors was damp and close. The environmental systems were working at their full capacity and a little bit more. People shuffled out of the cart's way, some staring at them as they passed, some not seeming to look at anything. The refugee station stank of loss and waiting. Almost every person they passed was a lifetime that had been severed from its roots. Holden and Naomi were the lucky ones here. They still had their home, even if it was a changed one.
"It's not Bobby," Holden said. "Of course I want Bobby. But the terms. Do we pay her? Do we redistribute ownership of the Rosie so that she's got the same stake in her that all of us do? I'm not sure that's a good idea."
Naomi looked at him, her eyebrows rising. "Why not?"
"Because whatever we do with Bobby sets the precedent for what we do with any other crew we bring on."
"Meaning Clarissa?"
"I don't want to give Clarissa Mao ownership of the Rosie," Holden said. "She's here and, okay, fine. I'm still not sanguine about that, but I can deal with it. And I want to bring Bobby all the way into the crew, but I can't. I can't agree that Clarissa ever gets to call my ship her home. That's the difference between letting her be there and pretending she's like Bobby, or you or me."
"No forgiveness?" Naomi asked, halfway between teasing and serious.
"Plenty of forgiveness. Loads of forgiveness. Some boundaries, too."
The cart lurched to the left, slowed. The chiming sound cycled lower as it stopped. Father Anton was waiting at the door, smiling and nodding to them as they lifted themselves out and bounce shuffled forward. The quarters for Holden's parents were better than most. The suite was tight and too small, but private. His mother's and father's didn't have to share it with anyone outside the family. Mother Tamara's yellow curry scented the air. Father Tom and Father Cesar stood in the doorway to one of the bedrooms, arms around each other's hips. Father Dmitri leaned against the arm of an old sofa while Mother Elise and Mother Tamara came in from the little kitchen. Father Joseph and Mother Sophie sat on the couch, a thin magnetic chess set between them, the pieces scattered by their game. Everyone was smiling, including him, and none of them meant it. It was goodbye again. When he'd left for his doomed tour in the Navy, there'd been a moment like this, too. A leave-taking that meant something they couldn't be sure of. Maybe he'd be back in a few weeks, or never. Maybe they'd be here on Luna, or transfer to L4, or something else might happen. Without the farm and decades of social inertia to hold them together, maybe they would break apart. A sudden oceanic sadness washed through Holden, and he had to fight to keep it from showing, protecting his parents from his distress one more time, just the way they were doing for him. One by one, and then in groups, they hugged. Mother Elise held Naomi's hand and told her to take care of her little boy. Naomi solemnly agreed that she'd do what she could. If this might be the last time he had his parents all together, he was grateful that Naomi was there to be part of it, right up until Father Cesar said goodbye. Cesar's skin was wrinkled as a turtle's, dark as fresh-turned earth. There were tears in his eyes as he took Holden's hand. "You did good, boy. You made everyone proud of you." "Thank you," Holden said. "You go give those fucking skinnies hell, yeah?" Over Cesar's left shoulder, Naomi went stiff. Her smile, which had been soft and warm and amused, became polite. Holden felt it like a punch in the gut. But Cesar didn't even seem to know that he'd said something rude. Holden was trapped between asking his father to apologize and preserving this last moment. Naomi, talking to Mother Tamara, plucked at her hair, pulled it over her eyes. "Shit. You know," Holden said, that's what he'll do," Naomi said. "You can count on Jim." Her eyes were on his, and they were hard and dark. "Don't make this more awkward than it already is," glowed in them as clearly as if she'd written it. Holden grinned, hugged Father Cesar one last time, and started the retreat to the door, the cart, the Rocinante. All eight of his parents crowded outside the door to watch him go. He felt them there even when the cart turned the corner and started up the ramp toward the docks. Naomi sat silently. Holden sighed. "Okay," he said. "I see now why you didn't want to do that. I'm really sorry that..." "Don't," Naomi said. "Let's don't. I think I owe you an apology." She shifted to look straight at him. "Your father owes me an apology. One of your fathers. But I'm going to let him off the hook." "All right," Holden said. The cart lurched to the right. A man with a thick beard trotted out of their way. "I was going to defend you."
"I know you were.
Just, I would have."
"I know.
And then I would have been the reason that everything had gotten weird and everyone would have gone out of their way to tell me how they respect Belters and how he didn't mean me. And you're their son, and they love you, and they love each other. So no matter what anyone said, it would all have been my fault."
"Yeah," Holden said.
"But then I wouldn't feel as bad about it, and I feel kind of bad about it."
"Cross you'll have to bear, sweetie," Naomi said. She sounded tired.
At the dock, Fred Johnson's crew was loading the last of the supplies into the cargo airlock. The new lace hull panels stood out on the Rosie's side like scars. The cart, having dropped them off, rumbled and chimed itself away. Holden paused for a moment, looking up at the ship. His heart was complicated.
"Yeah?" Naomi said.
"Nothing," Holden said, and then a moment later, "There was a time I thought things were simple, or that at least some things were." He didn't mean me. No, really, he didn't. Because I'm a person to him, and skinnies and belters, they aren't people. I had friends on the Pella. Real friends, people I grew up with, people I cared about, people I loved. They aren't any different. They didn't kill people. They killed Earthers, Martians, Dusters, Squats.
Squats?
Yup. Hadn't heard that one. She put her hand in his, shifted her body against his, reached up to rest her chin on the top of his head. It's considered rude. Holden leaned against her as much as the weak gravity would allow. He felt the warmth of her body against his, felt the rise and fall of her breath. "We are not people," he said. "We're the stories that people tell each other about us. Belters are crazy terrorists. Earthers are lazy gluttons. Martians are cogs in a great big machine." "Men are fighters," Naomi said. And then, her voice growing bleak, "Women are nurturing and sweet, and they stay home with the kids. It's always been like that. We always react to the stories about people, not who they really are." "And look where it got us," Holden said.